Have you ever wondered how sound can heal, inspire, and transform your life? What if the vibrations around you could unlock your true potential and guide you to a deeper sense of harmony? Welcome to Sound Pathways, the groundbreaking journey into the healing power of sound, creativity, and connection with your host, Dr. Karen Olson. In each episode, she explores the profound link between your mind, body, and spirit. From composers and musicians to sound healers and visionary leaders, she'll dive into captivating conversations that reveal how sound shapes your reality, heals our wounds, and helps us manifest our dreams. And guess what? You're part of the conversation. So call in and ask questions and experience personalized sound healing live. And let your sound be your guide to the life you've always dreamed of.
Soon we are going to be speaking to Monica Ryan. She is this beautiful songbird. We're going to have so much inspiration. So how are you doing today? Are you tuning in to yourself? And I thank you so much for tuning in here. It really is so meaningful that we can share the energy and the sound and the vibrations as we move and flow through life. Melody in Motion, Creativity with Courage and Sweetness with Monica Ryan. And we're also going to be talking about the second chakra, which has to do about creativity and flow and overcoming fear. I'm coming live to you today from Southern California, and it's been a lot of things that I've been able to conquer, to have fears that are coming up of things I didn't think I could do. So I wonder what fears you might have. Monica Ryan, she's going to tell you all about her experience in life. She has this project where she wakes up every morning and creates a new song. What would that be for you? I know we wake up in the morning and most of us brush our teeth, but what would it be for you if you created a project where every day you had this commitment? It would be an exciting process. Her new album is called Sweetness. You can tell from the title what it's about. She also balances her abundant career with a beautiful family and kids that are prospering and growing and moving on to new stages in their lives, as well as everything else that life brings. And we also share the experience of being in the Recording Academy. We are both voting members, and we've been able to share lots of celebrations and successes of our colleagues, and it's really a fun thing to learn more and more about that. So I'm wondering what your experiences are as we are here waiting. So maybe we'll just shift things up. We were talking last week about the first chakra and about how the chakras are these swirling energy focus centers that have themes. The first one was about our ancestors. And the second one, as I mentioned, is about our creativity. And that part of us that can aspire and can do more and more and more. I'm just looking here. Yes. So I'm wondering if I could share with you about my creative process. For me, I like to connect to divine energy and really connect to that energy, that flow energy, and to tap into my guides and my angels, and also the guides and angels of whoever might be served by the music that I'm creating. And it's in this process that we are able to just soar and to create. And here we have Monica, beautiful Monica, We are so delighted to have you here. We can't wait to hear all about your projects and all the things that you do. I really loved learning more about you, especially about your motivation to use your gifts to serve others.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. And it's an experience that we all have about trying to know what our meaning is in life and what our purpose is in life and how to share it and to share it in so many ways and how to find the balance. That really impresses me so much.
Oh,
how many people you support. So what I would really love to talk about, well, what are some of your proudest achievements professionally and personally?
Well, I can just say my children, like right out of the gate, you know. I think
yeah.
A lot of parents feel that way, right? You know, I chose to have my children. Neither was a surprise. And so I chose to bring these people into the world, and they're the lights of my life, you know. So I also chose to step back from my career, which I have no judgment on people, whatever works for them and their family. But for me, that was the right choice. And so I was able to be with them every step of the way of their childhood. And, still work, just basically flipping, the burners. In other words, I had these children that were now taking the front burners, and my career was still happening, but it was in the back burners. It didn't stop. I didn't take them off the burners. I just moved it to the back burners. And that was a luxury to be able to do that, actually, you know, to be able to not have to grind while I was raising children is a luxury. I understand that. So.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's very similar to my process. I really am very proud of my children and grateful for them. And it's fun to see all the new stages in their lives and just kind of live a little vicariously through them and also realize that they are totally different people are making their own choices. And just as that changes, and as a matter of fact, I'm here in LA with my son, and he has this new place, and I'm helping get it settled. And I also got to do some really fun music things that I want to share also. And going up to Seattle to put on a baby shower for my daughter and her husband. So lots of stages in life, and having the music kind of as a river flowing through and flowing out to everybody is a really beautiful thing and something we could show our kids, that we can still have the passion. And you're so prolific on top of it all. It would be more than discipline, because it just seems to come from such a higher place that it's the discipline combined with everything. So that would be amazing. We're talking here on this show about creativity and about moving to higher levels and about achieving our dreams and about overcoming fears and obstacles. And I would love for you to share about your creative process and what you do. You seem to have a very beautiful gift that is always there for you. Do you ever have the times when you have a block?
No, I don't usually run into blocks, but I think it's like, if you think of, for me, it's like a mountain climber. I'm sorry, I'm like, computer had got I don't think it's a virus, but it got like a virus threat and it keeps popping up windows. So I'm just shutting them down. That's why I keep looking up and shutting them down. I can still focus. But if you think about, like a mountain climber who climbs all the time, sometimes they come across terrain that's, challenging. And because they're so used to climbing and because they climb all the time, they have skills for overcoming those challenges, you know, either something that's too far a reach or something that's, they'll have to swing on their ropes and get around. They have the skills for that because they're constantly working with that. So I think of like creative process. Sure, there are challenges, but it's, I know I'm heading somewhere. So I just work around them or over them or through them or whatever it is. I don't like, it's not that challenges don't show up. It's that they don't stop me, I would say.
Mm, that's beautiful. It's a commitment and the vision.
Yeah.
Where you're going. It's interesting that you mentioned that because I arrived in LA really, really exhausted. And my son said, we're going to get up early in the morning and go rock climbing with this group. And I thought he must be kidding. You know, it was cold out and me rock climbing, but we went. It was exactly that. I had ropes on me and I had someone helping me, but I still had to overcome these fears. And it was so hard when I had to reach up and there was nowhere to see where I put my foot or my hand. And there I was. I was on this rock and I had someone that I could trust. And learning to trust that person and learning to go higher. I wish I would have gone even higher. But even today, as I was having these challenges, setting everything up, I have that in me to know that you can go higher, even higher than you think you can, even when you think you're too tired, it's too impossible. You can do it. And the feeling is great, right?
Yeah, I used to have a teacher. I had a wonderful teacher in music school. He's no longer with us, but he was a very, an incredible saxophone player and human being, very spiritual human being. And he used to tell everybody, you know, jazz is largely an improvisational music. Like I would say it's a music of collective improvisers. So improvisers who come together. As a group. So he used to tell us on improv, his name was Arnie Lawrence, and he used to tell us on improvisations to, go play as far as we think we can play and then play another time through the song. And he said, that's where the discovery is going to happen. Like there's all the stuff you've practiced and all the stuff you're ready for and all the stuff that the ideas that you're working out and all the things that feel natural. And then you'll get to a point where it does not feel natural. You've not practiced this. You've not been here before. He goes, that's when you take that extra lap because that's where you'll discover something. And I think that's very much like, you know, part of creating is that you have to get yourself to those places where you haven't been before to discover something new. I mean, it's good to be good at a certain, it's good to be able to work in the spaces where you're familiar, yes. But if you really want to create, you know, not just repeat, you got to get to places you haven't been before.
Yeah. What do you think about people that say in jazz there's no wrong notes?
I think, I think that there's a lot of ways to look at music, like, as an improviser, and jazz is very much about the individual and the individual aesthetic, that's part of the identity of the music. If that note is right for you, who's to tell you you're wrong? However, if you're talking about does it fit harmonically, it's like, how are you defining wrong? I guess the question is, what is the definition of wrong, really? Is the definition of wrong like it fits in the harmony, or is the definition of wrong like it doesn't fit for you as the artist? Like Picasso, there's a Picasso quote, like, you have to learn all the rules before you break them. Like, you can break rules in art. That's what artists do. Artists challenge convention. So if your aesthetic is, I'd say if it's a wrong note, if it goes against your aesthetic. So like sometimes things happen in unexpected ways when we're improvising, something flows through us and we're in the moment. And so I can't say it always has to be intentional. Sometimes it's a flow. But if you feel like, oh, that doesn't work for my aesthetic, then I would say it's a wrong note, but it might not be a wrong decision. It might be a step to discovery. Very open.
Well, for me, it was very liberating, that concept. I, you know, was at Juilliard and classically trained, and there's a very specific difference between the right note and a wrong note. and just exactly how it's played and how you might play it compared to how someone else might play it. And a lot of critics, and it's not even the ones just in your head, even though they right. can live there too. And I went to a group called Music for People, and when I began improvising, it opened up this huge world of freedom for me. I used to get really nervous when I played, and I was really aware of what people might be thinking and all of that. And when I was able to just play freely, I'd go in this zone and just channel this music to any size audience at any time. And one of the big concepts for me was no wrong notes, because basically if you play a note that doesn't quite fit, you move it into a note that does. And it's a different approach, of course, because it's free improv, not jazz, even though I've tried that and I have so much respect for people like you who it's just part of your blood. You know which note to just slide into or come out of. But I think in life it's helpful to know that you can improvise. If it didn't go as planned, you know, you could say plan A, plan B, plan C. But who's to say that plan B wasn't even better? Because for me, I was trying to be on the plan A. It caused a lot of anxiety for me, and I wasn't as authentic.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like perfection is a myth. You know, I fall into that sort of Eastern thinking, wabi sabi. You know, there's nothing is ever perfect. Perfect is flawless. Nothing is ever perfect. But you can play classical is about as close as you get to people playing exactly as written with room for dynamic interpretation mostly. But there's not like no interpretation. But I do have to say, I've heard concerts where like errors, end up being interesting. Like, how does everybody recover from that mistake in a classical ensemble together, you know? And you only know it's a mistake because you're just really familiar with that one little piece. And, otherwise you wouldn't know it was a mistake. And so what was that? That was like a really beautiful expression of people working together and making something beautiful that was unexpected. So
yeah.
is it bad? Yeah. You know, I don't know. I don't think so. It's,
you know. But I do think it has a lot to do with how we live our lives, mm-hmm. too, that we have this plan for the day, the plan for the project, and then things come up. And if we can kind of shift and go in a flow with more grace and more ease, and more acceptance and more imagination and creativity, that we just can go higher, we can go further. Because otherwise we might just be stuck in kind of a rabbit hole or those things that block us. Sometimes I also relate to them as beliefs about ourselves from childhood that I channel vibrations to help release those, which is a different thing. But I know your music also helps people in those ways. I'd love to know about your creative process about Sweetness, your new album that just came out in February.
Yes, it came out February 21st. I released it one single at a time, actually. It was really fun. It was sort of like I wonder, I've never done this way before. And I really enjoyed doing that because I was able to, it was sort of like showing the record very slowly over 10 weeks that I was, able to like, I released it in the order in which it appears on the album. So it really was like a slow reveal. Mm. And I enjoyed that a lot because a lot of the times when we release projects, like we curate albums, they're curated, right? We could put anything on it and we chose these songs to go together and for whatever reason. And, a lot of the times, you know, what's going to be the hit song is whatever's getting the attention. It could be singles that you release. It could be something that catches on somewhere and then everybody only hears that song or these three songs. But by releasing it as 10 singles, each song had its moment to be heard, you know, and that was really fun. Like I got to like say, and now we're focusing on this song. You know, so that was great.
How much time between releases?
A week.
Wow. Were they all done, already done when you started?
They were.
Each one?
They were. So I did the, I recorded the album. So the Sweetness was, I hired the band first. I really wanted to work with this band. I had, you know, known them since I was a teenager and not worked with one of them, maybe two of them. One of them I worked with periodically over the years, but like, it's a great band and they're in New York. And I was like, I want to record with this band. They're such a nice band together. And then when I thought about, I had written some of the stuff, but I didn't really have the identity of the album. I hadn't written the title track or several of the songs I had not written. Most of them I had not written. I can't even think of how much I did write before. I probably none of them actually come to think of it because I hired them in November or maybe October, November. And then the recording was in May, end of May. Mm. And so, yes, this is what happened. I say I have to jog my memory. Okay. So I usually work like one CD out at least. So in April last 2023, I was recording Playfully. And while I was recording Playfully, I was planning a trip to Spain where I would record alive. So it was the planning for one was happening around the time I was getting ready to record. Then the same thing happened. I recorded in Spain in October and by November I was planning the next one. So the album hadn't released yet. That was in October, you know, I was recording in October, but I was planning the next record. So then I planned that to record in May, released the one I made in Spain in July. So it was already done before I released the other one. So what happened was I hired them in November and I thought, like, what is the identity of these guys? Like, their music is really together, very sweet. It's very, very... you know, they can play all kinds of jazz, but what I wanted to do was this sort of sweet jazz. And so after I hired them, I named the album. So yeah. I was like, that's what this is. Yeah. And then I wrote the music for them, kind of like, you know, for this, the sweet element of how they play. And sometime after I hired them and I connected with the clarinet player, who is the person I had met recently, Adrian Galante. He's a super talent. I mean, he's a really talented young person. He's 28 years old. He's phenomenal, phenomenal clarinet player. And I had seen him at Birdland play at Jim Caruso's cast party, which is sort of like an open mic. And, not quite an open mic, but something like it. And I thought, I have to meet that guy. He's so good. He brought his own arrangement of a Cole Porter song. And by the time the show was over, he was gone. And then sometime later, I went back to Birdland to the cast party and again, he played and I said, I have to meet him. He's so good. And so after the show, I went up to him and I said, off, like I had this intuitive kick, like, see if he wants to arrange your album.
Mm.
It wasn't a plan. It was an intuitive kick. It was, I have to meet him. And then, oh, I think you could arrange this album well. Your arrangements are beautiful. I've already heard a couple of them and it would be very sweet. So he listened to the material. We met for lunch. And we got along really well because it's important to like the people you work with. And I sent him a file from my car of some of the songs that I had been writing. And by the time I got home, I had a voicemail in my inbox. I love these songs. I love, love, love these songs. Yes, I want to arrange them. So that was how the album, and you know, an arranger puts a whole voice on top of your voice, like your voice has become mixed, right? It's your song, but they're putting their whole spin on it. So,
it's a real collaboration.
It's a real collaboration, right?
Wow, so, that's beautiful. And we should share this is your 16th album.
Yeah, it's my 16th album under my name. And then I did one that was like a four-way collaboration. So, Yeah. And then I've done some singles and they're not all like in print at the moment. I took some down.
And where can everyone listen to your amazing music?
Oh, thank you. They're on all the streaming platforms and I have a few of them are in hard copy CD. And a few of them are not. I'm going to make hard copies of Sweetness. I just haven't gotten around to it. As an indie artist, I only have a few people asking for it. So, a lot of people don't listen to hard copies, and those who do don't mind waiting till, you know, I earn the money to press CDs, you know.
And can you share how many people you touch, how many hearts you touch? You were mentioning that when you graduated from music school, it was kind of one world. And then when you were out in the world, it changed over to the streaming and the digital, like overnight. And it just completely changed our lives as musicians and creators, and how you did that shift. And also, can you share how many streams you have on Spotify and things like that? It's just so beautiful, how you balance business and your creativity.
Oh, thank you. When I went to music school from 1993 to 1997. So it was like after I was out of school, Napster showed up. There were not MP3s of people's music. Like if you recorded an album or a demo prior to that, it would be on a cassette, you know, like, and like a little mini cassette, and then a DAT, you know, or CDs were then around, I don't know, around just before, like they were 1991. Some people were making CDs were out in the early 90s. Yeah, I would say that when you think CDs were out, I think they were early 90s, but I think still demos were sent on tapes. So anyway, it was a hard copy world. And, you know, also people weren't streaming media, other kinds of media either. So, you know, TV was not something people, you know, sat home and binged shows. They would go out into the world and hear live music. And when I was a young singer, if I was singing in a venue, you know, the venue knew that people would be out at it because they weren't on their couch watching the entire catalog of movies. And then if you had recorded music, which I did I made my first album at 25, people would buy it in the venues. So you had a whole income stream, really. Like the venues also paid you. They didn't do this percentage of the door, percentage of the ticket thing. And they did the advertising in newspapers and magazines. Like it was a different world. So if you booked a gig at a venue, they're advertising, they're presenting you, you are being presented to their clientele. That's not on you as a musician. And, they've offered you money for you to show up and do a job. It was very, it wasn't, you know, the big time, but it was livable, right? And then you could sell your CDs for $20 each. Now this, you know, shortly after I got out of school, streaming showed up, and I remember having arguments with other peers who were not in the music business saying, you know, the streaming isn't good for music. It hurts us because we make money and that, you know, upon each sale, that's how they would say these artists are rich. They're, you know, celebrities are rich. Pink isn't going to miss my money, you know, my dollar and all these things. The arguments were always these sort of blowing off what I was saying because they wanted the music for free. It's already made. How much money does she need? You know, kind of a thing. So, that was a losing battle. And, now we're making a penny per stream, even when they were first selling
even
downloads.
even less than a penny on it's like right. 70 streams for a penny on Spotify.
Yeah, less than. But it used to be $1 a download I used to buy CDs for presents for people or records for presents for people or for ask for them for Christmas myself, you know, and nobody's doing that anymore because it's hard to convince people to pay for something they're used to getting for free.
Right.
It's just hard. So we are not getting any money from there anymore. And now the venues, many of them are giving you a percentage of ticket sales and they're doing the minimum of advertising. You know, those that are advertising are doing the minimum. So it's really on us, the artists, to not just bring an incandescent music, but a performance and pay the band. And I pay my band a livable wage. So I try to keep up with inflation, but I am one of the few. So like when I get hired, a lot of the time people are not keeping up with inflation. They're offering me less, but I try to pay, you know, you got to be your, live your values. And so I end up being the shock absorber between this weird industry and the people who I hire, which is a whole other discussion. but anyway, I think it's very challenging.
I think it helps for people to understand the life of being creative and the support and the whole community and the whole feeling that we're all one, that when you give, you receive. And as you support people who are creating and kind of sacrificing their lives in certain ways to make this possible, that you can be a part of it. And I think it's more valuable than if people are part of it, as if we're part of a community, because it's just as important to be on the stage just pouring your heart out as it is to be on the other side and receiving it in your heart.
Oh yeah. I mean, live music is extraordinary. It's a communication. It's like anything live is different than a replication of it. Like you go to the Grand Canyon and it's a totally different experience than a postcard of the Grand Canyon. I mean, that's why people travel. One of the many reasons is that there's nothing like the live experience, and music is no different. I mean,
yes, it's a journey too.
It's a journey, and the artist is creating with you there. You're part of the your energy is part of the creation. So, yeah, it's magical. I go out to live music often. Again, living my values, but also I receive when I go out to music. Yes, I'm giving, but yes, I'm also receiving. And I think a lot of people have lost touch with that piece as well.
That's beautiful. Right. And when I was seeing some of the artists that influenced you the most, I read about Abby Lincoln. I love Abby Lincoln. And who are some of the other artists that really helped you form your own voice?
Well, there's so many wonderful artists. I mean, I feel like back to Arnie Lawrence, you know, used to challenge us as students when we were in music school to take everything we heard and put it in music. If you hear a car alarm, put that in your music. If you hear, you know, there's a place for every sound artfully used, you know? So put it in your music. Everything is your like, you know, library, your sound library. So on that level, I feel like I'm constantly being influenced. Like you overhear a really amazing laugh on the subway and that can end up in music, you know, but also, or a turn of a phrase that can end up in there too. Like, oh wow, that was an interesting way to say something. Like, I think I won't say it exactly, but I'm going to take an essence of that and weave that in, you know, but also, musical, like artists, I've spent a long time studying a lot of different artists. I mean, Abby Lincoln, one of the things about her journey that really moved me is that she was a star of this sort of 50s style of singing, like, and already a star, but she was not satisfied. She didn't feel that she was singing her authentic voice. And she kept experimenting and stretching and going to places she had never been before until she arrived at a place where, you know, when she listened to herself, it sounded like her. And it was totally different. It was a little bit tougher than that delicate flower sound. It was very honest, like a musical orator, you know, like saying powerful things and leaving spaces for you to absorb what she's saying. And she's a great songwriter. So I don't know. I have one of her songbooks and I think it might be out of print, but it's so good. So I love Abby Lincoln for that whole journey she took, where she arrived, the quality and conviction in which her statements resonate. And to that end, that's what I love about Carmen McRae also, is that you believe everything she says. You know, the way she sings, I don't know of any songs she wrote. So, she just delivered songs so well that she left so much space around each statement and each like phrase and phrased just so, leaning in certain parts of the sentence that, you know, it felt authentic and sincere. I love that. I love that.
Well, everything you're speaking about reminds me of how you sing. It's just so from your heart and you just feel it so deeply and raspy and all these different colors in your voice. And I hope everyone gets to listen to it. It's just really special. There's nothing like one of those phrases that feels like you're living it.
And thank you.
It can always inspire you. Yeah. Really does take you on a journey to somewhere else.
Thank you.
It's really, really beautiful. Yeah, thank you. And I wonder if you could share something about how you're so great getting it out there with the whole, I don't know if I should use the word business, but just being able to be organized so that it reaches more people. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and you had asked me about streaming. So streaming numbers are funny right now. I will circle back to that one because I've had a little bit of a problem lately with the streaming. And I think I know what it is, but, you know, there's always a lot of opacity in the music business. So this happened with this album that I have put a single out at a time. And then I promoted each single by sending each single to playlisters. And what happened was each song was getting a lot of plays, thousands and thousands of plays, right? You know, I was pitching each song to different playlisters around the world. And what happened is I noticed on like Spotify that my streams went way up. And then they went way down. And I thought, well, it's not supposed to go in the other direction. Like,
yeah.
But I was getting emails from my distributor that, you know, bots had been triggered. And I thought, I'm not using bots. So what is this?
Can you explain what a bot is?
Like, you know, using AI to promote to boost your numbers. But I wasn't doing that. And so, you know, Spotify, I think, you know how bots are imperfect. I think they were using AI to detect what they thought was AI. So they were using an imperfect system to police, that out of other people. It's like the weirdest, weirdest scenario. So I argued for my music over and over and over again, and I ended up losing a lot of those numbers, which means you lose royalties, actually. You lose money. They don't want to pay the money. But it's really disheartening, actually, because I achieved quite a lot of success, like a lot of success with this, and they took it right away in the numbers. So, and they can do that in the numbers because they're controlling their platform. So one thing I do know, and the thing that I take away from it, is that it got out there. Like, yes, they weren't bots. So whether it's reflected in the numbers or not, I know that people listened. And yes, I know that irrefutably. So, you know, as I'm sending them like playlist after playlist after playlist, quote after quote that's coming from for the music, they're still like, well, the bots, they didn't use the bots. They won't say that. They say, well, our detector says, and so your detector's wrong. Like, a person would factor these things. A machine might not, but your detection system is not accurate. But it's one person arguing against a behemoth. I mean, you can only do so much, and you can only, you know, that could distract me out of getting my work done. So I'll argue to a point, and then I'll just say, all right, I have more important things to do with my time than to argue with you. But
wow, that's great.
But I mean, getting it out there, I think video footage is good. You can make videos. There's a million ways to make videos. You can animate videos. You can shoot videos of yourself. You can shoot videos of the world. You can use free footage and edit the videos together. And so videos help a music. People like the video music combination. So if you accompany, however you make your video, if you accompany your music with a visual story, that helps. And then you put it wherever you think it's appropriate, wherever you think the audience may be. That could be on Facebook. It could be on TikTok. It could be on YouTube. It could be, you know, some playlisters actually like to see a video before they pick the song for a playlist. So basically with each song, I made a video. So
yeah,
I did a video and I released the video and the song on the same day. It was a lot of work. It was a lot of work.
Really? I saw some of the videos. They're beautiful, but I somehow didn't know that was part of your project every day.
Oh, no, I don't make them every day. So like,
oh, okay.
To make a video, it was every week with each song that I released. No. To make a video takes a long time, like takes hours. I mostly use free footage because there's a lot of it out there that's royalty free, and I'm telling a story. So the story is told through editing. That's the only way as an indie with like I don't have the income of a big artist. So I use my creativity to get the point across, and, yeah, so that takes me a few hours to make a video. Like, it could take me a half a day. And I'll put the video to the music, and then I cue it all up to go out. And then I support it, and I'm posting it everywhere, and I'm sharing it everywhere. So it's a whole, I have a good system for it, but it's a whole process.
And it all starts with a vision of what you see it being. Does it, or how
the
does it
the video, or the song, or the album?
Well, I guess all of it, including the video, though.
So the first thing with the album is, you know, when I create the album identity, oftentimes the sonic identity comes from who the band is going to be. It's always going to be a jazz album, but who are the musicians? What is their identity musically? And so I write music for those people and, you know, for me, but also for this group. And then I usually title it around the same time. Mm-hmm. In both this one and the last one, I had title tracks, and playfully the one before that, I didn't have a title track. And what happened was, I named the album and realized I should have a title track. And so I wrote the title track after naming the album. It was fun, actually. It's when you know what you're writing, it's kind of like easier in a way. Like if you know the name of your album, that's the first thing you do is you hire the band, you know who's playing it, right? Then the second thing you do is you name the album. Then you're like, okay, now I have the name of the show. Like, now I know what each piece needs to ladder up to. So then, you know, then you can just express that idea. You're not trying to squeeze things together that don't belong together because you wrote them in this time period. You're really writing for that idea. Mm-hmm. And thank so, you. Yeah, it's a fun way to go about it, I think. I read Twyla Tharp's book, The Creative Habit. I think that's what it's called. It's a great book. And she talked about like the power of restriction. Like we can all have like a glut of options, have so many options in creativity that, you know, you can just be stunned, paralyzed by the options, like in the vast sea of what you could create. You can be frozen in that. But when you have restrictions, then your options are dwindled. And that is not a bad thing. That's a good thing. So, like, if you know you have, Twyla Tharp's a choreographer. If she knew she had a character that she was choreographing in a wheelchair, that she knows there are certain things that dance couldn't have. But there are certain unique things that dance could have. Like, wheels are like their own world of movement. And all of a sudden she's got direction for what she's doing versus just they can do anything, you know? And I think for me, knowing like, okay, this album is called Sweetness. I'm not going to have things that don't fit that. So that's cut down a lot of those options that might make me not active. So that's the process. And then once you make the album, once you make the songs, you know, then you record the album. That's pretty much the most seamless part is the execution of the album. You've hired the band, you've written the songs, they've been arranged, then you're recording. Recording is the fastest piece of the whole thing.
Where do you like to record?
I record in all different places. Usually how it goes is, you know, again, I do pay my band a livable wage, and I always work with their schedules, and they give me a good deal. They don't charge me the same as they might charge, you know, a famous person, but I use the same people that the famous people use. If they had another recording till 3, we start at 3. Or we start at 4, whatever, and we go till 9, you know, whatever it is that I need to do to work with them so that they can be happy. Because the other, like a cardinal rule of creation for me, you know, when I'm the artist producer, when it's my project, when it's anybody's project, I'll participate in this. But, you know, it's almost always my project. I'm the host. And I know that when people feel good, the art flows the most freely. They're in their heart space. That shows up in the music. They're not feeling caged in any way or stiffened or taken advantage. There's no bitterness in the music. When they feel taken care of and when they feel their voice is important and mattered and that they know that they're not going to be shown in a light they don't like. They know they're going to be respected and credited and paid well. They're satisfied. Then I know that all of that will be in the music. And then I know the recipient of the music will get all of that. So I'm thinking at the root, at the very creative root of this tree, you have to have the energy be really good so that it goes into the music, so that it goes into the people. So usually my sessions are just a day for the whole album, but mm-hmm. they're done in such a way that we've had one rehearsal if we're lucky, And then that's about schedules more than anything else. One paid rehearsal. And then we record and we're organized and everybody's had the music in time. And it's usually one or two takes per song. And I don't worry about the vocal takes because the vocal takes for me are like an all focus experience. Like I want to be there for every word, for every breath in like a deep space with it. So sometimes it happens that the vocal take is great. You know, that happened on Sweetness, like two of the songs of the 10, the vocal take in the studio were great. Like I didn't need to do anything, you know, it just came out naturally and strong. But I usually don't really worry about that. I worry about everybody else because I know I can record me later. So I worry about everybody else's takes being their best take. If they want to retake their solo, they can retake their solo. The time in the studio is really about them, not about me. Even though it's my record, it's really not, that part is not about me. It's about them. And then I will go home and record here, actually on this microphone, my vocal takes. So I almost always record the vocal takes at home. And what I can do is then, you know, most of the time it's pretty quick, but if there's like, I might take it and be like, oh, I feel like I can do that more rhythmically, or, oh, I need to do that with a rounder sound or whatever it is. I can like, you know, massage the song in that way and not waste anybody's time and not waste any money. And so then I'll do that. You know, I'll take a day or two to do vocals in, around my life in the margins of the rest of life. And then I'll send it off to somebody to mix. I have mixed my albums myself. One album I mixed, two albums I mixed myself and mastered as well. But I'll tell you, I am, you know, though I know what goes into it, I prefer to hire somebody who's as good at their craft as I am at my primary craft. So I'm good enough to do it. And I get a good recording out of my own voice. But I prefer to hire somebody else to mix and master.
Wow. Yeah, I agree with you. That's all of it is exciting, and as kind of as you tweak it and it becomes more and more what it's meant to be, it's an exciting process. That's so beautiful, and you've shared so many things that can help people. I think so many takeaways for their own lives. I really like the zeroing in part because sometimes there's just so many options you get overwhelmed till it feels like there aren't any, and a lot of good practices we could have. And you also had a live concert. That must have been so amazing. I'm sorry I wasn't able to make this one, but how can people find out more about your events and all about you?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'll probably have another one sometime September, maybe one in December, but I don't do a ton of live shows for the reasons I said at the beginning of the show, this show. I like to pay my band well. I pay my band better than most of the people at my level do. The next level has more money, so they have more money.
But what is your website?
www.monicaryan.com. So, and that's Monica is with a K. So it's MONIKARYAN.com. So I do sing out, but I don't do them that often.
Yeah, but there's always so much going on. And are you on social media? What are your handles?
I'm Monica Ryan Music on Instagram, and I have two Facebook pages. I have a Monica Ryan Music and a Monica Ryan, and I'm on both of them. I'm on TikTok as Monica Ryan Music, and I'm on LinkedIn, and I guess that's it.
Well, thank you so much. Such a blessing. Such an honor to know more about you and how you are able to share so much beauty in the world.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. So we'll be keeping in touch then. Looking forward to all the beauty that you're able to share in your voice and that
thank
you create.
You.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you. So bye for now. And I'll just finish up here as well.
Okay.
So thank you. Thank you.
Lovely. Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. That was so exciting. I know we're kind of beginning to get towards the end of our show here, and I have a new setup that I work pretty hard on, and I would love to play a sound healing based on what we were just talking about those times when you just block out those noises that don't help you, and you tune in, and you find your voice and your way to craft it together, and those dreams and the next steps, and to take them and to do them. So I'm going to end along with blessings and prayers and wishes for you and your creative journey as you rise higher and higher on those mountains. And I'm just going to shift over here and share with you.
Thank you so very much for joining us on today's transformative journey. We're honored to have shared this space with you, and we hope you're feeling inspired and aligned with your highest self. For more insights, resources, and to continue your path of healing, be sure to visit KarenOlson.com, your gateway to deeper sound healing, music, and wisdom. Remember, Sound Pathways is here every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV, Station 1. Until next time, stay aligned, stay inspired, and let the magic of sound guide you.